I'm looking at where are the markets that have good affordability for my tenants. In the Twin Cities, our tenants are paying close to, I think it's like 39% of their income goes to rent. I like to see no more than 30% on average.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. And with me, as always on Wednesday, is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's good to be alive today. How about yourself, Todd?
I'm doing fantastic. So today we are, we're officially done with the apartment series. Yes. But we're still going to talk a little bit about it. So we're going to talk today about some out-of-state investing. But before we get started, John, anything new going on with you that you want to talk about?
Yeah, just got back from our local apartment investors group and meetup group, and we were discussing cost segregation there. So that's an interesting topic. We should probably go in depth on that on a different show. But yeah, just good to get out and meet other people who are buying and selling in the area. So
that's, I'm glad you just said we should talk about that on the show, because I got to get a guest on that does COSEG. So I'm actually going to make an invite. I'm going to put it on my notes right now to get a COSEG specialist on the show, because cost segregation is a super powerful tool if you're a real estate investor, whether it's multifamily, commercial. It's not going to be so much for a single family, but you know, if you've got a property valued much over $500,000, it's something that you really need to take a look at. So,
right. Yep.
It's definitely a powerful tool. And then the new tax code that came out makes it even more favorable as well. So,
right.
Yeah, definitely something we need to be talking about and be educating everybody on. So,
yep. Have things cooled down at your apartment?
Well, cooled down is not the right word, because we're having AC issues, right? So they're not cooling down. Now, right now we don't have any more units that are out, and some of the units, definitely a lot of the units are able just to get recharged, basically. And fixed. So that's good. But a few of them are going to have to get replaced, which is okay. I mean, we budgeted for, I think, 50 replacements of furnaces and air conditioning. So we definitely counted on some of them, but just, you know, frustrated last week a little bit. So
yeah,
I had to rant. But You know, that, like I said, it is what it is, and you have problems with apartment buildings, and that happens. So,
yeah.
And that's why, you know, it's really important if you're going to go buy or really any business, but you have to have that extra budget that we've talked about before. You have to make sure that you have money set aside for that oops factor. Because if you don't, then you're going to get stuck. And if you can't pay for it, then what do you do? I mean, throw your hands up and give it away, or you know, it's like, you've got to have that extra money. A lot of people did that in 2000, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11. They didn't have any reserves and they couldn't weather the storm. So that's really important, especially as we, you know, right now we've talked about already quite a bit, but we're not at the top of the market, or we're not at the bottom of the market right now. And so you've got to be really cognizant of where your money is and make sure you've got enough to weather any storm that may happen. So,
right.
So, well, yeah.
You know, one of the things we want to touch on today is just kind of a brief glimpse at our local market here in Minneapolis Twin Cities area. So I'm going to do a test here, see if I can share something from my screen, and let me know if it's showing up okay. Should be up there now.
Yep.
Okay. So you can.
So what are we looking at, John?
Right. So this is some data I've got from Reese, which is a company kind of like CoStar, or kind of like some of those other websites that collect data from the market. Mm-hmm. So this is the local Twin Cities market. It shows a couple different things, and their statistics, of course. So it's a rolling 12-month numbers. So one of the statistics that we look at, as we've talked about in the past, is the capitalization rate, or the cap rate. So, and the time frame for these data is, it's just a little bit old. It's from quarter four of 2017, but it's showing 4.6% on a going cap rate for our area here.
So that's our average cap rate.
Right.
Okay.
That breaks down to about $111,364 per unit. And one point of clarification on these statistics, they are primarily based on 40 units and above. So, yeah. So yeah, that's just kind of a glimpse. You know, in the future I can get more up-to-date statistics, but I had this slide here prepared for the seminar I did a few weeks ago.
Okay.
So
John, that's nice to know this data, but I don't, maybe you have this, maybe you don't, but for me, one of the more important things to know is, where is the market historically at?
Sure.
Do you have any of that data?
Let me see if I can get to the right slide here.
Yeah, because, you know, knowing that we're average properties at a 4.6 cap, you know, is nice. But if we're typically in the Twin Cities average at a 6.6 cap, we know we've got, you know, 2.6 of compression, basically. So
this, I don't know if this will show up for you in the recording here, but this is a historical look going back to Q3 of 2015.
Okay, so not too far, but at least it gives us a little glimpse.
Yep. And so there's a couple different lines on here. The top one is the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
The, I don't know if you can see the colors, the dark blue one, the second one down is the U.S. overall.
Yep.
And then the bottom line is our Minneapolis metro area.
Yep.
So we're
traditionally trading about a 1%. Is that correct? It's hard for me to see because it's a little small, but it looks like we're trading 1% traditionally under the national average.
Yeah, the different lines are about 0.5% different.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say we're about 0.5% below, at least where we were a few years ago.
Well, we're at 5% in 2015, and it looks like the national is at 6%.
Oh, okay. Comparing that, yeah. I misunderstood your statement earlier. So, yeah, so we're about 1% below the national.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, so it looks like if we base this on from 2015 to today, we're compressed from where we were in 2015. And now, again, this isn't a very long snapshot. It'd be really nice to see from, you know, 19, well, as far back as we possibly can and see kind of where the trends and ups and downs are and kind of get an average. But looks like right now we're about, you know, 0.5% compressed from, you know, where we kind of maybe should be. Maybe not even quite that. But again, that's hard. It's hard because we're only taking a few year snapshot.
Right.
And that's one thing I really like to look at when we're looking at markets is where are we compared to the history? So.
Right. And I'll take that down off the screen. But you're right. I mean, for people who already own their buildings here in Minneapolis, you know, right now, so we got a lot of buyers looking and the prices that you're able to achieve right now are pretty good. On the flip side of that, if you're a buyer, it's hard to find things and you're pretty much paying more than you would have a few years ago.
Yep.
So.
Well, and one thing as a buyer, and this goes along with every market, because every market, not every market, but majority of markets right now have cap rates that are compressed compared to 2015. If we take that same snapshot and look at markets throughout the country, you're going to see a similar trend, some markets more than others. And you saw it on a national level too. The national level was over 6%. Now it's, I think it was under 6% if I remember right.
Yep, you're right.
But, you know, one thing that you've got to kind of remember too is that rents have risen in that time. And not all landlords have raised their rents up to market. So if in 2015 you bought at a 5 cap at that point in time, and I'm not talking future because we can't 100% predict future. So at that point in time in 2015, maybe you bought at a 5 cap, but you're only able to raise rents by 6%. And now in 2018, maybe you bought it at a 4.6 cap, but you're able to raise rents by, you know, 15%, a larger percentage, which can make up for that cap rate difference. So that's something, too, that you need to consider. Even though you're just buying at a lesser cap rate, if you can add enough value, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
Kind of what I look at, what I like to look at is where's that median cap rate? Where's it traditionally been? I like to look at the highs and the lows too. I like to look at, boy, I mean, Minneapolis in whatever period of time was at a 6.8 cap. Okay, so that if I'm buying in that general area, which I would say if you're looking at averages, you're looking at like a B class type area. So if I'm buying in a B class area, I know that cap rates could, for my property, could be as bad as a 6.8 cap, but they also could be as good as a 4 cap or whatever that is. And the median is a 5.3 cap or whatever that might be. That way I can look and go, okay, where am I at now? What can I get this thing up to? And can I get it to above, let's say if that median is a 5.3, can I get it above a 5.3? And if I can, I know I've got a healthy investment. So it's kind of nice knowing what it's at now, where it's been, and kind of what can you do to the rents to raise that property. Cap rate's not everything, but it's extremely important measurement because it tells us essentially what our property can sell for.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's some people discount cap rate and I think they discount it too much. I don't buy solely on cap, but I pay a lot of attention to my cap rate and where it's at.
No, and I definitely would agree that you can't just take this one statistic and then say, well, I know my building is worth X, because you also have to take into consideration your location, the amenities, the class of the building, all these different things. So, this is just one piece of the puzzle.
Well, and the other thing, John, too, is we know in different times, there's in 2015, there was a lot less buildings being built.
Right.
And so now in 2017, when that was done, there was a lot more buildings being built. So brand new buildings are generally selling for a lesser cap rate. And so we also have to think about that as what were the buildings being sold? Were we selling new stock? Were we selling, stock that is older and more tired? And so those also play into a factor. So taking really short term can also hinder us a little bit if we're not careful about how we're looking at the data.
Yeah. And just briefly, I'll share with you, if I can get this back up. Yeah. Let me know if you can see that.
Yep.
But this is the construction and absorption properties in our metro area here. And this is past and predicting into the future. And they do that based on what's been already, plans submitted, plans approved. And
can you increase that size at all?
Let me see if I can a little bit.
For some reason, it zooms out when you popped it. There you go. Perfect. Okay. So it looks like in 2017, we had a really large amount of construction.
Yeah.
In 2015, we also had a pretty large amount of construction. So it popped out again. But anyways, and they're projecting now 18 and 19 to drop considerably, which if that happens, that should help maintain our markets.
Right.
So and yeah, that's nice data to look at, because we want to be into markets that aren't being overbuilt.
Yep. And some of the future stuff we don't exactly know, because right. Now that people are feeling more confident in the market, we might see a whole new slew of new plans come in.
Yeah.
We don't really know what people have up their sleeve, but this is based on what we do know, what we have. So
yep. Cool. Well, that's good to know. And anybody who can't see what we're saying, so this is, we'll be on YouTube. So if you want to look at it, go to YouTube and you can kind of see what we're talking about. But even if you can't, know and understand that looking at the data, looking at the historical data is really important to understand what's going on. We want to know what the construction starts are. That last graph that you showed really tells us the story. We can see that in 2017, we're building a lot of apartment units. And actually, I know for sure that 2018 is that graph is not updated, because there's been a lot of approvals for apartment buildings. Where in 2018, we're slated to build the most amount of apartments in Minneapolis that we've ever had in the history of the city. So, that's important to be able to know and understand of where we're going. And you posted actually a pretty interesting article on, I think it was on, was it on LinkedIn or Facebook, either one, about the millennials potentially moving into the suburbs. And I tend to actually agree. I don't think that millennials will stay into the city forever. And eventually millennials are going to get married and have kids and want to, move out. That's where they grew up. And so they're used to that and they like that. Now every one of them won't, but I do think we're going to see that. So that's something to kind of pay attention to, as well as we're building these apartments in the inner city and what's going to happen to that, all of that inventory. What's going to happen and how is that going to be, how is everybody going to be affected by it? So,
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, obviously, whenever we talk about large groups of populations, we're generalizing, and it's not going to apply to everybody. But I myself, if I think about this right, I believe I'm an older millennial, so I'm just barely in it. But And I happen to live in the inner city. I live very close to downtown Minneapolis. I actually have a family of four kids. You know, some people are just starting out their families. I started a couple years ago, so I've got four kids now. And of course, I feel that draw to go out where there's more space, there's more land, there's more room for the kids to get around and not be on top of each other, not having to worry about the neighbors or whatever else like that. So.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we lived in the city until about 3 years ago. And you know, our whole lot was 40 feet by 125 feet, I think, or 130 feet somewhere around there. That's our whole lot. And then we got a house and a garage that takes up a good portion of the lot. And then of course you've got a small front yard and a quote unquote big backyard. That's still a really small, small yard. When you looked at that entire yard, it's like, boy, I mean, that was almost nothing. And now I look out right now and we're in the suburbs and, you know, we've got almost 2 acres and then our yard backs up to another 150-ish, 40-ish acres. So it's a little different story. My kids are free to roam. My dog's free to run around and, get lost and get stolen.
but once you have that space, I'm assuming it's pretty hard to think about, you know, downsizing to going back to such a small lot, right?
Yeah, it would be challenging I could go for, you know, a suburb type lot potentially. But it definitely would be very challenging to go for a city lot.
Yeah.
So
it's all kind of like off topic for what we planned.
Right. We're completely off topic. So let's go on topic and we're going to talk about out of state investing and probably end up doing this a couple times because today we're just going to hit a little bit of it, especially because we've now just rambled on. So for me, I've chosen to start investing out of state. And one of the reasons is because of the statistics you showed, you know, you showed the 4.6 cap. And to me, that's not the greatest cap rate. Our market has been really good for a long, long time. There's, in my mind, not a ton of value. Now there's deals. Don't get me wrong. There is deals and people are adding value and doing really well in the Twin Cities. And I continue to look all the time. If I find the right deal, I will buy it. But there's also, it's a really hot market. So it's, if you're going to find something that's quote, you know, listed or in the hands of a broker, it's going to be challenging to find something that's a good deal. I was looking at 100 and I think it was like 108 unit or 100 unit building in one of our suburbs that I was sent. And I ran the numbers. I thought, geez, this building has potential. It's a great area. It's a, you know, it's a B minus building in a B plus, maybe even an A minus area. I could raise rents, just, you know, do some upgrades to the units. You could do a lot to the units. You could throw in granite. You could do whatever you wanted, and that area could support it just because it's a nice area. So I thought this thing has potential. So I ran my numbers, and then I, you know, came up with a price of I could buy it around like $11 million, and I that would be stretching it. $11 million would be stretching it. And I talked to the broker and I said, hey, how much do you think this thing will go for? And he said, well, about $14 million. And I'm going, geez, you know, $14 million, that puts me at buying it currently at like a 3.4 cap. And once I add that value, I might be able to squeeze a 5 cap out of it. But at $14 million, it would be, I don't think it'd be next to impossible to get it up to a 5 cap. So I think you'd probably be right around that 4.6 cap, which means I just did all this work to this building and I'm, you know, upside down because I've got closing costs and I've got all that kind of extra cost. So I'm actually upside down in this building. So it's a great deal for somebody who wants to lose money, but it's just not a deal for me. You know, you'd have to be able to get that building up to, you know, But you'd have to be able to buy it for $11 million. It just doesn't work. So somebody will probably buy it. But to me, they're going to overpay. And if this market softens at all, or if the interest rates go up, I think they're going to be hurting. And I might buy it from them for $11 million. But so anyways, so we're going to talk out of state investing, because that's kind of what I've chosen to do. And there's things you've got to look at when you're going out of state. You don't just want to buy for cash flow, at least in my mind. And you don't just want to buy for appreciation, again, at least in my mind. So we got to find markets that we can have both. I hear a lot of people talking Cleveland and Memphis and, maybe Mobile, Alabama, and Birmingham, and certain markets that have, you know, great cash flow, which is fine. But we also have to look at, is there opportunity for growth? Is there opportunity for new companies coming in and sustainable growth? And so that's, I think, one of the biggest things that people, they get caught up on the prices. You know, they get caught up on, oh, we can buy something in the Midwest for, you know, for half the price or quarter of the price per unit. But they also aren't looking at the big picture.
Yeah. Half the price compared to the coast, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, shoot, Minneapolis, we're at $111,364 per unit. I bet I could buy in Kansas City, Missouri, or Memphis, Tennessee, and get the same type product for, you know, $50,000 to $70,000. You know, so it's not quite half price. Well, if it's 50, it's more than half price. So, but so yeah, half price even compared to the Twin Cities. Now, if we're taking that same building and you throw that in, you know, San Diego, California, we're probably buying that instead of 111,364 a building. You might be the first number might be a three. I don't know. I haven't researched that market very much just because it's not a market on my list. But just because a building's half price, though, doesn't mean that it's a good deal, is what I'm saying.
Right. So when we're kind of looking at the broad United States of America and trying to just, what are the couple of things you mentioned already? One, just potential for growth in that area. What types of growth are we looking for?
We want job growth. We want job creation. We want good jobs. We want a mixture of kind of high paying jobs, not necessarily CEO type jobs, but we want some, you know, some high paying jobs that we think are going to stay around. So you don't want necessarily just all manufacturing growth. I would actually say some good diverse growth. So if we got some manufacturing, great. If we got some construction, great. If we've got some tech, fantastic. If we got medical, another great, you know. So we got to look at what's coming in, what type of jobs are coming in. If it's all like, if Amazon brings in and it has their distribution, well, that's going to bring in, you know, let's say 1,000 jobs. But are those high paying jobs or low paying jobs? So, you know, likely they're not extremely high paying jobs. That's good. But we also want some other types of jobs as well along with that. So we got to look at what's coming in. And then so we want to look at current job growth and future projected job growth. And then we also want to look at what are wages going up in that city? Are they going down? Are they stagnating? Is population going up? Are people wanting to move into the cities that you're looking at? So if you're, you know, looking at a specific city, I used Kansas City before. So if you're looking at Kansas City specifically, and you're going to invest in urban Kansas City, it's important to go, maybe the Kansas City area is bringing in lots of jobs and there's growth in that area, okay? But is urban Kansas City bringing in jobs And if they are they also bringing in population? Because people can choose to live in the city or out of the city. Where are they choosing to live? If they're choosing to live out of that city, then don't invest in that city. Invest outside of it. If they're choosing to live in the city, then invest in that city. So you want to look at a lot of different factors when you're looking into that. We want to make sure there's growth. If there's not growth, if you're not growing, you're dying. If the city's not growing, it's dying. So.
Yeah, and so to find all that information, you would go by the Census Bureau. And
yep. Yeah, so we can go to Census Bureau. We can go to the Met Council, Chamber of Commerce. Some other great data is if you don't have access to the CoStar, the Reese that you were talking about earlier, Marcus and Millichap, CBRE, Colliers, Cushman Wakefield. They've got data on their webpage that they give away just for free that you can go and look. You probably have to sign up for an account there, but you're not paying them anything. You're giving them your email address. And then you can get, their free research that they've done. Bureau of Labor Statistics, all that kind of stuff. So the local government will have it all or should have it all. So. The other thing, so employment's great. The other thing that we want is I want where we are in the real estate cycle. So there's a couple things you've got to think about. Okay. If you're at the bottom of the real estate cycle, or you think you're at the bottom of the real estate cycle, investing for appreciation with cash flow, of course, but investing for appreciation with some cash flow is a really good strategy. So investing in cities that you're going to see, maybe they're a little more expensive, but they've seen a good downfall. They're still maybe a little more expensive, but traditionally they've got good appreciation. Those are great markets to invest in. But if we're in the top of the market cycle or closer to the top, the markets that see less of a fall during a crash and the markets that have affordability for tenants are great markets to look at. So that's right now what I'm looking at. I'm looking at where are the markets that have good affordability for my tenants. In the Twin Cities, our tenants are paying close to, I think it's 39% of their income goes to rent. I like to see no more than 30%. On average. So that's what I'm looking for in my markets. Where are the areas that are paying 30% or less of their income on average in rents? And so that's what I look at. And that's one of the first things I look for. And then I dig into the other things. So make sure that affordability is there. And I think that's really important. Affordability is there for our residents.
That's really important. For so many different reasons. I mean, if somebody's overpaying for their housing and then they have one, disaster in their life, a health issue or car breaks down or they lose their job, then they can't afford their rent.
Yep.
And so that's going to be, definitely something to pay attention to there.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's a sad fact, and one of the reasons why I wanted, do a lot of this is to change this, but everybody lives, not everybody. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. Every single day they are, worried about, can they pay their bills? And if they're not worried every day, they probably should be worried. Because they're living, literally spending every penny that they have, and that's on housing, it's on all kinds of stuff. And people have kind of taken this, they want to live this luxurious lifestyle, a lot more people, I think, recently. And so they're living paycheck to paycheck. And if you're charging them 40%, 50% of their rent, eventually when the market does turn, they're going to go for those cheaper housing because they're going to be forced to. or they're going to double up or whatever that might be, but you're going to be scratching your head going, why can't I, you know, make my mortgage payment anymore on my apartment building? Well, it's because your tenants can't afford to pay you. So you can't afford to pay the bank. So that's why I like these markets that are affordable. And I think the other thing is they have more upside, right? If your tenants are paying 45, 50% of their rent, it's hard to all of a sudden tell them, look, you know, you're paying 45% of your income towards rent. Now I'm just going to make you pay 55%, but just hang in there. It'll be fine. Well, in these markets, we've got this job growth and all this other stuff going on and income growth, and they're only paying 25%. It's a lot easier to go, hey, I'm going to raise the rents. Now they're paying 30% of their rent, but you know, you've got that cushion. So,
yeah, I have a question. I don't know if you're going to have the answer to this, but nationwide, what do you think the number of cities that are affordable are compared to the ones that are, you know, people are paying a good 40, 50% of their income towards their living expenses like that?
Yeah, I don't know the statistic, but I do know as I research markets that majority, there's more than 50% of the markets have rents that are not affordable. And affordable meaning the standard I just gave, 30% of your income towards rent. And that's kind of actually been, it's not like this is a new phenomenon. This didn't just happen yesterday. That's been the trend for a long time, but it's still to me very important to look at that statistic. And so certain areas, like if you're going to invest in San Francisco, right, they're paying way more than 30%, but statistically always they are. So you just, if you're investing, if you're like a San Francisco investor, that's where you invest. You just got to be looking out, go, okay, today now people are paying 65% of their income towards rent. Can they continue to do that? When the market crashes now, they'll be at like 40%, let's just say. Well, now is the time to buy. Buy when they're at 40% because you know it'll go back up to 60, 65%. But when it's at 40%, that's affordable for the people there because, and that's just how it is. And that's how it's been for a long, long time. So every market has a different threshold. That's what you also have to do. You truly have to look at that. But that's, shoot. There's a great market example. When the market crashes, San Francisco area is a fantastic area to invest in if you can buy good deals because you know the appreciation is going to go way up.
Yeah, so when you looked at options, you narrowed it down to a few. I don't know if we want to get into that right now. You came up down with – you know, how many, when you were looking at your options, choosing a market and looking at affordability, did you come up with a good 2, 3, 4 options to then dig deeper into, or how did the process go for you?
I came up with, you know, 25 different cities. And then I narrowed it down even more by looking at, okay, so what's that government planning? You know, what's happening in the city as far as what's the government doing? Are they being proactive? Are they trying to improve the city, or are they just kind of just happy with the status quo? I also look at, you know, what's the absorption rate? What's the vacancy rate? What kind of construction's happening in those areas? So then I narrowed it down even farther. And then the last thing I really looked at is there opportunity for me to come in and buy? How competitive is that market? Are there buildings that are, you know, distressed that I can, you know, renovate and add some value to and really, you know, have that kind of cushion to where I can force appreciation through renovation. And so that narrowed it down even farther. And so from there, it was, you know, further research, further, looking, and I ended up flying out to a few markets and, I'm constantly looking and researching markets and trying to talk to people and, you know, try to keep up on the current markets that I'm at to make sure that, I'm paying attention to the construction starts and paying attention to what's happening in those markets. And that's really important. And I think whether you're investing in your own backyard or not, you should be looking at all of that stuff and making sure, because you don't want to be investing in your own backyard and investing in a time where there's just way too much construction activity going on for the population or, you know, stuff like that. You get stuck. So it doesn't matter where you're at. You need to pay attention to all that kind of stuff.
Very good. I'm sure we can go a lot deeper into more of this as we go along, but that's probably a good amount of information to start off with here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, next week we'll talk more about some strategies to getting into some of these markets and kind of more of the what, you know, what you should be looking at and who you should be talking to and all that kind of stuff. So
very good. So for those listeners and viewers out there, as we begin to talk about investing out of state, if you've got some specific questions, we invite you to bring those to us. You can comment right on the YouTube video, or you can comment on the Facebook channel. And be sure while you're at it to give us that 5-star rating and the review.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even know this was a possibility, John. Somebody gave us a 5-star rating on Facebook.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a possibility to do. So I appreciate that. Do you know who it was off the top of your head?
I don't have it up right here, but
see if I can get to it real quick. But that was news to me. I all of a sudden I get some notification that we've got some, a 5-star on our Facebook. I'm like, what is that? Like you can do that. Let's see here. Reviews. That was a 5-star rating by, Evan Holiday. So appreciate that from him. So, and actually I'm going to be on Evan's podcast. He interviewed me the other day. And so
cool.
I'll end up being up on that shortly. So yeah. So if you go to Facebook, give us a 5-star rating on Facebook. Otherwise iTunes really helps us build our brand. That's kind of, they're kind of like the powerhouse in the podcasting industry. So, yeah, iTunes would be fantastic to get a rating review on, and that helps us out. And share it out. You know, we'd love to keep on getting listeners and add value to people.
Sounds good.
Well, cool, John. I think that wraps it up. Make it a great day. Make every day a Saturday, man.
You too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity and properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.